Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Now, you may have read recent articles and an editorial, too, in the Post Standard about our next topic and our next guest's role in shepherding a new law into the books in New York State. Let me introduce you to Dr. Kathy Faber-Langendoon, Chair of Upstate's Department of Bioethics and Humanities. Good morning, Dr. Faber-Langendoon.
Good morning.
Welcome back. It's been years since you were here the last time.
It has been a while.
Well, we're happy to have you because this is really an important new law. Tell us about it.
Just this last month, finally after 18 years, was passed a law that allows family members to make decisions on behalf of patients if patients can no longer speak for themselves.
Now, this is kind of mixed up to me because we're talking about the family making decisions, and yet we have this system where we can fill out healthcare proxies forms. We can appoint proxies or agents to make decisions for us. What's different?
Healthcare proxies are terrific and ought not be gotten rid of just because of this. So a healthcare proxy allows a person to designate a specific person to speak on their behalf.
And that's a form that you fill out.
It's a form you fill out. You can fill it at home. You need a couple witnesses, but you don't need a lawyer. It doesn't need to be notarized. It's a simple form. Your physician or other healthcare provider ought to be able to provide you with the form. And so a healthcare proxy allows you to appoint a specific person, and you can write down what your specific wishes are, and it's a very good thing to do.
For end-of-life care.
For end-of-life care, and really for any care when you can no longer speak on your own behalf.
Right.
However, despite how wonderful this mechanism is, only about 20 to 30% of adults have used this and actually completed a healthcare proxy.
Really?
Yeah, and that's despite us having a healthcare proxy law for over 15 years in New York State and for 20 years in most other states in the country. So we've had healthcare proxies and living wills, advanced directives, they're kind of different flavors of the same thing for 20 years. And people just, there's never a good day to do this, it
right.
seems like.
And it doesn't seem like it needs to be done quite today. I can put it off till tomorrow.
Right.
They don't get done.
Right. And when you really need it is when you can't speak for yourself and you're no longer able to fill out the form.
Right. Exactly. All right. So this new law then covers this other 75 or 80%.
Exactly. So if a person has not previously said, I want my spouse, I want my daughter, I want my best friend to make my decisions on my behalf, it then sets up a hierarchy of people who could make those decisions for you. And they might be decisions for treatment or they might be decisions against treatment. The law isn't just about withdrawing treatment. It's about empowering the people who know you best and know what your wishes would be to speak on your behalf of what you would want.
So let's set up a scenario. And actually, I have a story I want you to tell us here in a moment. But let's set up a scenario first. So somebody's in a car accident, mm-hmm. a bad accident. They get taken to the emergency room. They're still hanging in there, but it looks like it's going to be the end. You have doctors all around. You have family all around. Who's making decisions before the law was passed?
Before the law was passed, as long as families agreed to treatment, we presume they had authority to make those decisions, even although it was a little iffy in the law. But as long as families said, yes, let's do the next thing, let's get the MRI, let's send her off to neurosurgery, let's try life support, that was fine. The point at which it looked like the patient wasn't going to recover or the burdens of treatment were too much on the patient, the family did not have the authority to say she wouldn't want this, unless they had very clear and convincing evidence that the patient had specifically anticipated the specific situation and said, I don't want that specific kind of treatment. And it's very hard for people ahead of time to anticipate exactly
sure.
the circumstances of what's going to happen to them.
Right. And absolutely, you know, we've had other conversations about that. It's almost impossible to anticipate every scenario. You can anticipate some basic ones. All right. But the new law then says that the family, having had these conversations with the person, can make those decisions about that very end-of-life care.
Exactly. They can make decisions for treatment or against treatment. They're supposed to make those decisions based on what they know of the patient's wishes, even if they don't meet that clear and convincing evidence standard, but you're supposed to make that based on what you know about what the patient would want, what you know about her values, her beliefs.
Because you've known her all her life.
Exactly.
Right. All right. Tell us the story, because you testified in Albany mm-hmm. before the bill was passed. You were one of the people who helped legislators understand why this was important and why they needed to consider passing it. So the story was Sheila Pouliot?
Yes, correct.
Please tell us about her.
Yep. A patient who was taken care of here at Upstate, and we can talk about it because it became a matter of in the courts and a matter of public information.
So we're not violating any privacy laws
right,
here.
Okay. Right. And the family has been very gracious over time in terms of wanting to make sure that change happens because of what happened. So Ms. Pouliot was a 42-year-old woman with developmental disability. Her family had remained very active in her life and her care. Sheila lived at a group home under the auspices of the states, and the family remained very involved on a weekly, daily basis. She started suffering a decline of more and more medical illnesses and hospitalizations, and eventually came into the hospital, was in the intensive care unit, got out of the intensive care unit, but still was very, very ill, unable to eat, had a feeding tube in, and the family, looking at the burdens of treatment on her and how debilitated she was and how much ground she had lost over the previous year or so, said enough is enough mm-hmm. and wanted to stop further aggressive treatment, including antibiotics. And
they were looking at her quality of life.
Very much so.
Yes.
The physicians taking care of Ms. Pouliot were supportive of that as being an ethically justified decision. But the state and the Attorney General's office was concerned and actually brought action to prevent us from honoring families' wishes because of their interpretation of the state of the law at that point, which was that unless you had clear and convincing evidence that a patient didn't want life-sustaining treatment, we were obligated to provide it.
Mm-hmm.
Sheila, having been developmentally disabled, never could have established her previous wishes with any clarity, nor was she ever able to appoint a healthcare proxy.
Right.
So this really consigned her to...
She was incapacitated.
Right.
Right.
So she had... the courts ruled that she had to receive all treatment possible, and what happened is she really died a prolonged and gruesome...
Painful.
Painful death. It was really... very difficult for her family and for the caregivers.
And that was over the course of like 18 months, right? It was a long time.
It was closer to about 4 months here in the hospital.
Oh, okay.
Three to four months in the hospital. But it was a long, prolonged, painful dying process. And we did the best we could to provide comfort. But it was the sort of dying that none of us would want. And it was done because of the state's interpretation of the state of the law. So that got us, myself and others, very motivated to
yes.
try to improve the law. Because I think at that point your choices are a couple. One is you can just fly under the radar screen.
Mm-hmm.
You see a law that isn't right and you can just try to ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't change anything for people down the road.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, certainly, because then if you see it again, then you're thinking, oh my gosh, we should have done something about it the last time.
Right.
Yeah.
And different institutions, you're more or less able to fly under the radar screen. And that's kind of the state we've had over the last 10 or 20 years, that at some institutions we will give family that authority and hope no one questions it.
Mm-hmm.
And at other institutions, they follow the law and people get treatment that their family insists is not in their best interest or really what the patient would want.
Is this kind of law at all unusual in the United States?
No. This is not a cutting edge sort of accomplishment. We are the 49th state to come up with some way, whether through case law or specific legislation, to allow families default authority to make these decisions.
So you're telling me 48 states have already had this in practice and we're just now catching up?
Yes. Missouri, the show me state, will be number 50 or they will stay where they're at. But we're 49 in terms of recognizing that absent a healthcare proxy, we should first go to the family.
And why on earth did it take so long?
There was opposition on a couple of different fronts. And the opposition went to concerns about small but important categories of people. So, for example, some right-to-life groups, including the New York Conference of Catholic Bishops, was concerned about the circumstances of a pregnant woman. You can imagine a pregnant woman who somehow has a catastrophe and is facing the end of life on life support. And there was concern about the impact of a decision to withdraw treatment on the fetus.
I see.
So that was an issue that needed to be discussed. There is the issue of whether artificial nutrition and hydration, so a feeding tube, should that be seen differently? Some people consider that to be basic, ordinary treatment, and so that ought never be withdrawn. Other people say it's medical treatment. We get air through a tube that's called a ventilator.
Mm-hmm.
You get Ensure through a tube that's artificial nutrition. Those are not any morally different. They're both medical, and people can choose for them or against them. Others will say, no, feeding is very basic, and we should never withdraw that. So that was a conversation and a controversy.
And you know what? We're running out of time. We're going to come back after the news and pick up where we left off, because I'm very interested in what the arguments would be for or against such a law, and I think our listeners will be too. Can you stay with us?
Absolutely, thanks.
That's great. And listeners, we are going to take a break. Please do stay with us. This is Upstate's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.